relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
If you like America First, then check out our separate podcast, The Battle for 1600, with my former White House colleague, Boris Epstein. Every week, we give you the inside, in-depth analysis of what's really going on. The Battle for 1600. Subscribe today.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
Not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome, welcome, dear friends, to a very special edition of America First with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka, former strategist to President Trump and member of the National Security Education Board. Today, we have three very, very special guests for you. Each one will be with us for the whole hour. It's my favorite form of radio. It is the deep dive. That's why I love radio. In the TV world, you have 180 seconds to explain a serious issue. Here we can dive into the real meat of that issue for a whole hour. And our first guest is a regular, one of your top favorites on the show, joins us every week. Born to a scion of the former president of Canadian breweries, born in Quebec, in Montreal. He rose to be in charge of the world's third largest English language newspaper empire. His formal title is the Lord Black of Cross Harbor. Welcome to America First, Lord Conrad Black.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Sebastian. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, for those who may just be tuning in because it's a holiday for the first time ever, they may have skipped over the radio channels and landed on our show today, and who aren't familiar with you, Conrad, is there a taxonomy that applies to you? How would you describe yourself? Because you have achieved so much already, whether it's your more than a dozen books, presidential histories, works on statecraft, the history of America's strategic evil, Canada, the media world, on and on and on. If you had to describe yourself to a Martian who just landed, who is Conrad Black?
Well, I pay the bills by being a financier. I'm in commerce. I'm in financial industry. But I'm also a historian and a commentator, thanks to people like you who invite me on their programs and other outlets that publish what I write. In the past, I've been a publisher and other things, but I would say I'm a financier and a historian and a commentator, if it's not too pretentious to use three words.
No, in your case, many more are justified. I have two of your works that I would like to concentrate on today. The first is, of course, your work on my old boss, President Trump, Donald J. Trump, a president like no other. And the one that I started most recently, A Life in Full, your work, your sizable tome on President Richard Nixon. But before we get there, let's do a general, let's address the question generally. Given recent events, whether they're in Canada, whether they're in the UK, whether they're in the United States, have you seen a significant alteration in the modern political life with the advent of candidates and premiers like Modi, with events like Brexit, with the arrival of a non-politician like Donald Trump? Is there a qualitative significant change in the way that modern politics is being exercised today?
Yeah, I'm sure there is, but I mean, it's a little hard to stretch it across societies as varied as India and the United States. Look, the intense concentration of the media and the vast multiplicity of choices for people who consult the media, these are changes. I mean, I'm older than you, but I well remember when everyone waited to hear what Walter Lippmann thought of things, and when really, public opinion in the United States was very heavily influenced by the three established television networks and two or three or four leading newspapers and a couple of national magazines. And that really, they had a colossal impact. Now, their franchises have deteriorated, except for perhaps the Wall Street Journal, all those franchises seriously. And you have a much broader base about that influence opinion. You have much more uniformity of opinion. Never in my lifetime, and I believe ever in the history of the United States, have you had the leading figures of the American national political media saying proudly that it is not their job to inform, it is their job to advocate and crusade. Well, that isn't their job. And the people who employ them should consult the economic and commercial consequences of them holding and acting out their belief that that is their job. I mean, all of these franchises have deteriorated, I think, precisely because the people don't believe them anymore. And as you know, all these polls show a great majority of Americans don't believe what they read in the media or hear from the media, at least in political matters. But in the world as a whole, I think you touched upon another phenomenon, and that was that with the collapse of communism and the triumph of variations of the free market economy, you have, just with China and India, almost 40% of the population of the world regimes that are now pursuing economic growth. I mean, you remember when Mao Zedong said that was all rubbish. He professed to be a doctrinaire Marxist, and he dismissed Western economics. And in India, you had Nehru and his daughter Indira Gandhi fondling a rose from the same rose bush in New Delhi and saying, well, we don't, the fact that there's a lot of poverty around has nothing to do with it. It merely contributes to India's absolute status as the pillar of virtue of all nations. And that's why the world should listen to us, precisely because we have a lot of poor people who are not corrupted by the capitalist system or stultified by the dogma of communism. It's complete nonsense, of course. Now you have an almost universal drive for economic growth, and capitalism has been legitimized, but we have these phenomena of communist capitalists ruling in Beijing and left-wing billionaires sitting in Silicon Valley, and now, even a few of them in Wall Street.
Now, to that point, Lord Black, do the old labels of conservative or Tory and Labour or Democrat, do they have any application in a world where, I mean, I saw it with my own eyes working for President Trump. His appeal to the working class was undeniable as a billionaire Republican, quote unquote. And on the left, we have a Democrat Party, at least in America, that is mostly run by and speaking to rich white people in the coastal urban centers. Do the old labels we became so used to in the 20th century, have they lost their connection to any tangible reality?
Well, I think you've got two aspects to that. I think there is still a base to each party, the Democrats and the Republicans, but the base has evolved. I mean, clearly, Bernie Sanders, as he himself said, he thought that his followers, in policy terms, essentially socialists, comprised 35 to 40% of Democrats. Well, you know, that's up from 5% in Roosevelt's time, and not more than 5 or 10% as late as LBJ or JFK. And I wouldn't have thought it was more than 15 or 20% in Clinton's day. So that has moved, certainly. And on the Republican side, obviously, a lot of the very wealthy have ceased to be Republicans. And the most recent Republican president has, and it's an honor to be in the batting lineup that warms up for him, getting up to him, and for Victor Hansen also. They're both good friends. As you know, and you know better than most people, the tremendous inroads that President Trump made on the traditional Democratic hunting grounds and state, politically speaking, of African American, working class people generally, and Hispanic American. And so, yes, the bases are evolving. The ideological words conservative and liberal, I think, still have meaning.
We're going to continue the whole hour with our special guest on this special day. He's Lord Conrad Black. Follow him on Twitter at Conrad M. Black. He is the author of, among other things, Flight of the Eagle, A Strategic History of the United States, and most recently, Donald J. Trump, A President Like No Other. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is the Salem Radio Network, and our show is America First. Stay on this channel. Relief Factor. Have you tried every other form of pain relief only to fail and not find your answer? Well, try this incredible product that is providing liberation from pain to tens of thousands of Americans across the country, including Alicia from California. I'm a grocery store worker and have been working doubles during this coronavirus shutdown. At 52 years old, my two bad knees are not getting a rest. I literally limp to and from bed. 2 days into Relief Factor and the pain has decreased substantially. So thankful for this amazing product. That could be you. It should be you. Find out today the only way you can by ordering the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com. Call them at 800-500-8384. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening just like I do. And I promise you, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Alicia, and thousands of your fellow Americans. What have you got to lose except the pain? Do it today. 800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com.
Spending my 13th birthday at Angel Tree Camp. I've been coming here for 5 years, and my favorite part about Angel Tree Camp is going to the lake and the pool, and it makes you feel like you could be comfortable with the people around you, like you could have fun and learn about God at the same time.
She's Savannah, and why has she gone to the Angel Tree Summer Camp 5 years in a row? Because she is one of the millions of children across our nation who's lost a father or a mother to the prison system. And the Prison Fellowship helps you to help these children get out of that cycle and be in a safe, Christ-centric summer camp. Please help as many as you can. You've already donated enough for 500 children. Let's make the numbers fly even higher. A donation in any amount makes a difference, but $200 secures a place for a week in that summer camp for children like Savannah. Go to my webpage, sebgorka.com, and make a donation today. Be a modern missionary. You can call the Prison Fellowship on 888-206-2794. That's 888-206-2794. SebGorka.com, the Angel Tree banner right at the top. Make a difference today. Please help these poor children. We are back with our first special guest on this very special day. He is Lord Conrad Black, author of just whatever you find written by him. Buy it and read it. You will not regret it, especially his latest work on my old boss, Donald Trump. Donald J. Trump, a president like no other. But that's not the only president he's written on. He's written on FDR, and I have in my hand the weighty tome on Richard Nixon, A Life in Full. And this I'd like to dedicate at least one segment to Conrad, if we may. Why is Nixon so misunderstood, and what is the gravest misrepresentation of Richard Nixon?
I think misunderstood because the left never forgave him for the fairly strenuous position he took in the height of the Cold War. I mean, the height of the Cold War in terms of the radioactivity of the whole idea of any association with communism.
So prior to becoming president, when he worked on Capitol Hill, when he worked with McCarthy, so that was the original sin?
He never really worked with McCarthy. They were on different committees. But I think it was put succinctly by one of his entourage that the left never forgave him for being right about Alger Hiss. When he got Alger Hiss convicted of perjury, and he did say, it must be, I'm an admirer of Mr. Nixon, and I knew him in his last 5 years, and I much liked and admired him as a person, knowing him.
Oh, we've lost Lord Black for a second. Sorry, we lost you there for a second. So you met him in his last 5 years. Continue, please, Conrad.
And I liked and admired him as a person, knowing him, as I had admired him as a public figure. But I think it's fair to say that even by robust political standards, he made some rather aggressive comments about the proclivities of President Truman and Secretary Dean Acheson to be accommodating to the Soviet bloc. And he did regret them later, and he specifically retracted them in the presence, directly to both those men, President Truman and Secretary Acheson. But the left took against him as someone who did Eisenhower's dirty work and was a kind of panderer of the Red Scare. They exaggerate. He wasn't that extreme, but he got slightly carried away. And so having taken against him, they never forgave him. And they never gave him any credit. For example, in 1960, when Eisenhower urged him to contest the election, I mean, there was a real question, and there remains a question, who really won in 1960? And Nixon said, no, it would be bad for the country, I won't do it. And he got no credit from anyone for doing that. And as to the greatest misunderstanding about him, it clearly is in the Watergate thing. After all these years, Sebastian, it's been 50 years next summer since the Watergate affair. And there is yet to emerge any conclusive probative evidence that Mr. Nixon committed any serious offense. Now, clearly some people in his entourage did break the law. And he bears some responsibility logically, morally, for tolerating and to a degree inciting an atmosphere in the White House that where at least marginal law breaking was clearly not something that was absolutely forbidden. As far as he and his the people working with him were concerned, they were responding to terrible provocations from people breaking the law all the time, stealing documents and publishing them in the newspapers making public secret, in a clandestine way, all manner of confidential information, and conducting an absolute smear campaign against what they considered to be their attempt to do their patriotic duty and extricate the country honorably from a terrible mess they inherited from the Democrats, which was a reasonable perspective, by the way. But the greatest slur on Nixon, the greatest misunderstanding is that he was a crook or a criminal.
Now, or had committed any crime at all. Now, our listeners need to read this work, A Life in Full, but what is, given what you've researched, written about him, having met him, what is his correct and just position in the pantheon of American presidents? What is his rightful place, Lord Black?
In the second rank, immediately behind the great presidents, who I would say are generally agreed to be in chronological order, Washington, Lincoln, Franklin D. Roosevelt, and Ronald Reagan. They'd be my choices, and I think most people who study these things would agree with that. He is in the second group, along with Eisenhower, Truman, Jefferson, Jackson. I would say Polk. Teddy Roosevelt, certainly. I think, even though he's not popular right now, Woodrow Wilson, and I myself would say Donald Trump as well. Those of your viewers and listeners who are old enough to remember it should just bear in mind, I'm an admirer of President Johnson's too. I think he's been much wronged. But the fact is, when he left office in 1969, the United States was in a terrible state. There were riots everywhere all the time. Anti-war riots and race riots all the time, every week, all around the country. You had 550,000 American draftees at the ends of the earth with no exit plan, and they weren't even seeking victory as a strategy. There were no useful negotiations to end the war. And the North Vietnamese had made it clear when Johnson made his overture after his meeting with South Vietnamese President Thieu in Manila in 66, that what North Vietnam wanted was not just the so-called reunification of Vietnam, which had never been unified, but the absolute defeat and humiliation of the United States. This is what Nixon got. 4 years later, they were out of Vietnam with an honorable agreement and a non-communist government in Saigon, which could have been sustained on the same formula that the South Vietnamese, with American air support only, defeated the North and the Viet Cong in April of 72. They'd opened relations with China, triangulated great power relations, had the greatest arms control agreement in the history of the world, in which the U.S. regained nuclear superiority that Robert McNamara gave away on behalf of Kennedy. He founded the Environmental Protection Agency, abolished the draft, reduced the crime rate, ended school segregation. It was Nixon who ended it.
Yes.
And he did all of this, and he won by the greatest plurality, even now, many years later, with almost twice as big an electorate that we've ever had, 18 million votes.
A greatly maligned president. Find out more, A Life in Full, Richard M. Nixon, by our guest, Conrad Black. This is America First. Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory compensated subcompact 9mm? Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan, and I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest-capacity micro-compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations, the class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine and 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend.
Portions of America First are brought to you in part by Job Creators Network.
We're talking American history, statecraft, and American presidents. For me, there is a moment in time, a moment in history where Donald Trump won the election in 2016. It's when he took his adversary's catchphrase and flipped it and truly became a populist candidate. Play cuts.
My opponent asks her supporters to recite a three-word loyalty pledge. It reads, I'm with her. I choose to recite a different pledge. My pledge reads, I'm with you, the American people.
Yeah. masterful communication to take that concept of loyalty to the candidate and to turn it 180 degrees and to say, I'm with you, the American people. At least for me, that was the moment when he won it. We're talking to the man who's written a superlative work on President Trump, Donald J. Trump, a president like no other, Lord Conrad Black. Find his writings regularly at AmericanGreatness.com, AmGreatness.com, and follow him at Conrad M. Black on Twitter. Lord Black, how remarkable is it, as an observer of domestic U.S. politics and presidential administrations, how remarkable is it that having won that election with a populist message, America First, Make America Great Again, that for the next 4 years, he suffered the slings and arrows of incessant libel and calumny, whether it was being a misogynist, an Islamophobe, a racist, a white supremacist, or eventually a literal Nazi, that President Trump won more votes than any other incumbent president in U.S. history and actually increased his share of the support of the electorate by more than 10 million votes. Did that surprise you, Lord Black?
Which part of it?
That he did even better despite the 4 years of incessant libel by the legacy media.
No, that didn't surprise me because he, in fact, on his record was an extremely effective president. I mean, a 90% reduction in illegal border crossings, the identification in a responsible way. We were talking about the McCarthy era earlier. There was no sort of red scare, but a responsible recognition of the challenge from the People's Republic of China, he accomplished a great many important things, including, in particular, apart from the illegal immigration being practically eliminated and the Chinese challenge being identified, the elimination of unemployment, and the first time in any serious jurisdiction in recent times when the lowest 20% of wage earners were progressing on a percentage basis more quickly than the top 10%. He addressed this income differential gap in a way that the left always talks about but doesn't accomplish anything when they attack it. They just attack the rich and don't do anything for the people at the other end of the spectrum. And these are accomplishments that the wall-to-wall hostility of the media that you referred to in the first part of your remark tried to disguise from the public. I thought he would be reelected. Now, to be fair, I am one of those, and I think this is a tremendously important inflection point of American history. I'm one of those who believes there are real doubts about the validity of the election result. I'm not a conspiracist. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm not an irrational person in a tinfoil hat. But you had an absolutely uneventful election in 44 states. In six swing states, there were all kinds of peculiarities that arose as a result of changes made to voting and vote counting regulations that ostensibly accommodated those who were affected by the COVID public health crisis and facilitated their ability to vote. But in point of fact, whether that was the motive or not, the effect of it was to make the results in a number of places very questionable. 42,000 votes flipped in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Georgia, and Trump would have won in the Electoral College. So this attempt to stamp out the thought that there's any question about the election and to promote this nonsense that he was trying to incite a resurrection, an insurrection on January 6th, all of this, that's the big lie, and that's where the big battle for the heart and mind of America is.
And something that came to me this morning, I have yet to tweet it out. Innocent parties are rarely scared of fair and free audits. And what we are witnessing in Arizona and elsewhere may be a sign that there is indeed fire where there is smoke. Our guest is Lord Conrad Black. Follow him at Conrad M. Black on Twitter. His regular writings at amgreatness.com, the fabulous site, American Greatness. We will be back with our very special holiday guest momentarily after these messages. Don't touch that dial.
Hi, this is President Trump, and Sebastian is really a friend of mine. He's a great guy. He's been with me from the beginning. Listen to him. We all learn.
Thank you kindly, Mr. President. It's official, my friends. Biden has declared war on the small business community. In his first 100 days, he's pushed for a massive tax increase on small businesses. His $2 trillion, quote, infrastructure plan is truly a $2 trillion tax hike. He wants to make it even harder for small business owners by having a minimum wage. But there's one group that is fighting back, the great people at the Job Creators Network who represent small businesses. They're looking for a few good men and women to join this advocacy and advisor program. They'll train you up, help you to place op-eds in local papers and get on local TV as well. If you own a business, if you want to join the fight, go to joinjcn.com. It's the Job Creators Network. Learn more at joinjcn.com today. They need you. America needs you. The majority of people in America work for small businesses. Let's fight for them. We are back with none other than Lord Conrad Black for the whole hour today on this special holiday episode of the America First radio show. But I must mention, not only will we be joined by Victor Davis Hanson in the next hour, but he has a podcast with VDH, as he is lovingly known, and Bill Bennett. Subscribe today to Lord Black's podcast. It is Sense and Intelligence. Victor Davis Hanson, Lord Conrad Black, and the great Bill Bennett. Lord Black, we've been having what I enjoy most, long-form, deep-dive discussion. Now I want to get truly serious. As a man who has built media empires, who commentates today, is a historian as well. How concerned are you with the political developments in America when it comes specifically to the First Amendment, freedom of speech, and the role of the Fifth Estate, the media, or the Fourth Estate?
I'm very concerned. I'm very, very concerned. The fact is, as we were saying earlier, all polls show that a great majority of Americans do not believe what they see or read on the media, at least in opinion, political opinion, and they're right not to believe it. And when you get a society that attaches little value to a free press, free media, because of the conduct of that media, that is dangerous to democracy. When it is not valued, it is apt to be lost because people don't see it as an important loss. I mean, the fact is, let's be frank, Sebastian, if Don Lemon and Wolf Blitzer and a lot of other people that we could both mention, I'm perfectly friendly with this guy as an individual, but Tom Friedman, if they all vanished, I don't mean died, I mean just vanished from the media, would that be a terrible loss? It would enhance the quality of public information. And I don't know how things degenerated so quickly, but as a former media executive, these things have to be handled in an executive way. The people ultimately at the head of these organizations are responsible for maintaining their professional integrity. And I blame the leaders of the great networks and the leading media outlets, print media outlets, including periodicals as well as newspapers. I blame the publishers or the controlling shareholders, whomever it is that's ultimately in charge, for allowing this to happen. And what we need is a collective movement back towards the resurrection of what we always insisted on in our company. And we had distinguished titles, the London Daily Telegraph, Jerusalem Post, Chicago Sun-Times, and National Post in Canada, leading newspapers in Australia, was the separation of reporting and comment. And I always said to our people, look, if these reporters, any of them, want to get off their chest what they really think of these things that they're reporting on, they can do it, but it has to be a signed piece on the comment page. Yeah. And we would always do that. But now we've got all of these media outlets engaged in a holy crusade to tear down America, to defame American history, and to convince the country that it was always a slaveholding operation from the beginning and is a uniquely flawed place. It is the classic case of a country which, having banished or seen off in one way or another every major foreign enemy, turned on itself. And it is a very scary process with some precedents historically that are extremely unpromising. Now, with that said, I'm an optimist about the United States. I think the great majority of Americans are opposed to this. They know their country is not perfect, but they know it's a great country. They love their country, and they won't stand for it much longer. That's my bet.
And beyond the mixture, the melding of opinion and news and the cancellation of President Trump on social media, what about the even more disturbing developments of late? This new commission to investigate the Trump supporters on January the 6th. Are we seeing a radicalization of institutional politics, Lord Black?
I think we are seeing that, and more particularly, we are seeing the demonstration of the fact that the Democrats have had no position whatsoever for the last 5 years except Trump hate. I mean, I think what we saw in the 4 years of his term and what you described in the earlier segment as just a relentless assault upon him, it was that the bipartisan establishment where the White House changed every 8 years. But all of government was Democrat, all of personnel were Democrat, all of Washington, D.C. was Democratic, and the Democratic presidential candidates got over 90% of the vote in D.C. year after year. That mindset and that comfortable, cozy establishment, the swamp, so-called, was so shocked and horrified that someone was coming in promising to turn it all upside down and drain the swamp, that they essentially spent 4 years assaulting him, often in extra legal ways. We're still waiting, for the special counsel in Connecticut to produce his report.
Yes.
But you assume that they'll get there eventually. Let us keep our fingers crossed. But that's what we're dealing with.
In the meantime, whilst John Durham seems to be absent without leave, we have the announcement recently that Cyrus Vance's son, the district attorney for New York, is opening criminal investigations on Donald Trump. Will it ever end? That's a good question. If you look at the nation's capital, which, as Lord Black said, more than 93% voted for a particular political party, and that's never a good thing. We'll be back with Lord Conrad Black. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First on the Salem Radio Network. He is the co-host of the podcast Sense and Intelligence with VDH and Lord and Bill Bennett.
Portions of today's program are brought to you by Prison Fellowship.
If you like what you're listening to, support our supporters, especially Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, a good friend of President Trump, a truth teller, a great American. MyPillow.com, get up to 66% off if you use my name. Call 800-829-8468, MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. We are with Lord Black for our first hour next, Victor Davis Hanson, his co-host, along with Bill Bennett, of their podcast, Sense and Intelligence. Subscribe today. I have one question about President Trump, but first, I wanted to allow you to finish your thought from the last segment, Conrad.
Thanks, Sebastian. I just wanted to make the point that having had no policy in the last 5 years except Trump hate, the Democrats, having got off to a very rocky start, we had 110 days or something now, and we see the shambles. You know, 80% of the gas stations closed in Washington, D.C. because Russian cyber thugs shut down the pipeline, and they paid a bribe to these criminals, and the president accepts the word of the Russian leader that he knew nothing about it. But the point is, now we see it. We see Vance going to a criminal investigation of the Trump Organization. Ms. Hennessy, the ultimate mudslinging Trump hater of them all, the chief salesperson for the Trump-Russia collusion hoax, coming back into the Justice Department. And we see the January 6th investigation, which is obviously just a mudslinging smear job for Pelosi. They're going back to Trump hate again. They've had government now for 110 days, and it's too much for them. So let's go back to abominating the former president, because that's all they've got. I assume the country's tired of it.
I dearly hope so. We've got a few seconds left. Lord Conrad Black, you've dealt with President Trump. You've negotiated with him in the private sector. What is the one thing our millions of listeners should know about him that isn't well understood? We've got 60 seconds.
First of all, he's a very loyal friend. He's an absolutely loyal friend in that domain of personal relationship. He's a completely reliable person. Second, as a business partner, he's as good as I ever had. My American directors warned me. They said, you know, hang on to your wallet and so forth. He was absolutely straight. And we were developing a site in Chicago. He came in right on time, right on budget. And third, he is a wonderful raconteur. You can tell that from his public speaking. He's extremely humorous. But his organization is a serious organization. He runs a tight ship. They all knew what they were doing. They were very competent people. So he is a good businessman. He runs as an administrator of first-class operation. We saw that in government, too.
Donald Trump, loyal, a straight shooter, and a very effective businessman and raconteur, like somebody else I know called Lord Conrad Black. The book is Donald J. Trump, A President Like No Other. Get it today. And if you want the truth on Richard Nixon, A Life in Full, also by our very special guest. Next, we are joined by his podcast co-host from Stanford University, the preeminent military historian, a man who deserves the title strategist, Victor Davis Hanson. Thank you, Lord Black.